Hey, Nick.
Hey, what's up?
Well, that was a drill. They're drilling outside of my place again.
Constant drills. Welcome back to the Danko Jones podcast.
Yeah.
Episode 95.
We are reaching the 100th episode of this podcast very quickly.
I was late coming here.
As usual.
We've gone over it several times. Let's just say won't happen again. Probably might happen again.
Yeah, your text was, I'm going to be 10 minutes late. My reply was, yeah, I know.
Right. You should always be like, meet me at 12:50.
That's what I should do. But
always. But you never do.
I know.
Anyway, we have a good guest today.
Robin Duke. Comedic legend. She is...
Saturday Night Live. SCTV.
There you go. With having Robin Duke, she fulfills this wish that I had for the podcast, which is including getting a member of Kids in the Hall, a member of Saturday Night Live, and a member of SCTV on the podcast.
And this was a twofer. You wound up getting two for one.
That's right. We mm-hmm. had Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall, mm-hmm. oh my God, 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which was, by the way, one of the best days of my life.
Yeah, let's get Scott back.
We got to.
How are we going to do that?
We got Scott on the podcast through your contacts. Now.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got Robin Duke through my diligence on
Twitter.
Social media.
Yeah.
Finding Robin had a Twitter account, tweeting her innocently enough, putting your name out there in hopes that the mm-hmm. comedic connection, you know, maybe
accomplish
you guys...
anything.
I didn't really suspect it did, but...
No.
Anyways, still...
Didn't really... Yeah, she didn't know.
Added a little
she
bit
was
of,
nice to me, though.
Yeah, I thought she... Yeah, I thought she was, and she was nice to us, very accommodating.
Because we were excited to see her.
Super. I mean, it's a fan... I think you can hear our fanboy voices.
And we didn't know what to expect, and as soon as we sat down, we realized, oh, we're very interested in everything about Robin Duke, so...
Oh, this is more than just a Q&A about you being a... prof at Humber
yeah,
College.
That's where we went. Her job at Humber College to talk to her. She teaches there in the comedy program, which is very lucky for those students, and probably some of them it feels weirdly surreal.
And that was something we've talked about too, is her students at this point in time
mm-hmm.
are 2-3 generations removed from understanding what a legend they have mm-hmm. as a teacher in Robin Duke. And our excitement mm-hmm. and our fandom for her was very evident on the podcast, I think.
I think it was, but this was one of my favorite episodes in a way, just because we went out of our way to do it, and then it seemed like she appreciated that, but understood it more like in the moment of, it was just seemed like there was this very kind of, we were all pleasantly processing what was happening as it was happening. So I think she was happy to be asked questions. And I think that this portion of my explanation will likely be deleted from the podcast, as it's really kind of taking a long time.
And one of the other things that I really must say is Robin Duke isn't just, you know, oh, okay, she was on SNL, SCTV, Booker. No, she's genuinely one of my favorite SCTV players.
And like, she's still working
yeah,
as well. She's on Man Seeking Woman on FXX. With like Jay Baruchel, Eric Andre. So she's still, you know, doing things that are relevant, which is actually true of, you can go down the list of really most of the SCTV performers and the besides deceased ones or retired ones, you know, they're all doing things. You know, Eugene Levy has Schitt's Creek with Chris Elliott, Catherine O'Hara is on that.
Yeah.
Andrea Martin is doing stage work, like really high level stage comedy.
It's all talked about on the podcast.
Yeah. So,
but you know, the thing about SCTV is there was no one who called it in. There wasn't every single cast member was very strong
mm-hmm.
and they were able to work with each other. There isn't there isn't a member of the cast where I'm just kind of like, oh yeah, they kind of.
I think it was
by.
Just because it was so many Second City performers and so many people who had come up together, so there was just a very similar energy between all of them, and so it kind of like sewed the universe together of SCTV
and Kids in the Hall, Saturday Night Live, SCTV. These shows formed my sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta
probably
say, everyone's sense of humor.
More SCTV and Kids in the Hall, really.
I mean, yeah, if you're a Canadian, but if you live in the rest of the world, it's all those shows combined, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're Canadian, Kids in the Hall and SCTV.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I watched, when they were rerunning Saturday Night Live, I watched every single episode from every single season. So, I mean,
When did they rerun Saturday Night Live?
They ran it when the Comedy Network came on air in Canada for the first time. At 5 to 6, they would run the half-hour edit, edited out best of Saturday Night Live, like Saturday Night Live episodes. So they'd take out, I think, musical acts, and they'd take out the sometimes Weekend Update. But it was all the other sketches.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I had no idea. But anyways, this is Robin Duke. You're going to hear Nick and I very talk. Very excited and on our best behavior as we talk to a legend.
I wasn't late.
You were not late for this. No. Mainly because I was driving you to the location.
But I wasn't late to be met.
You weren't?
I don't think so.
No, you were. I waited in my car. Remember that?
Yeah, but you were at the wrong location.
Because you gave me the wrong location. No. You gave me the wrong street.
No.
You were 3 blocks away from where you told me to park.
No.
Okay, let's start.
No. The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Daniel's co-host. Hello for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down. The googly gaggly goblins will make sure they get their podcast fill by listening to Danko Jones, then snacking on some broken bones. And scaredy cats will run amok when rock and roll starts to talk, flapping gums and striking tongues. A chilly podcast has now begun.
Login protocol initiated. Sequencing algorithm interface. The official Danko Jones podcast uploaded. Listen with caution. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Danko Jones has a podcast. It's called the Danko Jones Podcast. La da 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 da.
Well, we are at Humber College, a place that I never thought I would set foot in, because school and me just don't mix.
The deep West End of Toronto.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm a East End kind of guy, so.
Oh, yeah?
It's not right.
But you're here.
We're here.
And you're here.
We're doing
Humber.
A podcast with you.
I can't believe what we have. We got Robin Duke.
I know, it's shocking, isn't it?
Honestly,
how did that happen?
Right now.
I almost stalked you a few years back in Yorkville. Yeah, I was.
Oh. This is a terrible way to start.
Martin Short's sister-in-law had an opening at the Drabinsky Gallery in Yorkville.
Oh, Grace.
Yeah, and I was there.
You were there.
Yeah, there's
why?
Because I knew people who were at the gallery.
Okay.
And when I walked in, just mingling, saying hi, and you turned the corner and you walked out, and I go, "Oh my God, that's Robin Duke!" Oh,
and gotta start putting makeup on.
I start running down everything that I know you've done, and I go, "Should I run after her?" And what am I going to say when I run her down in Yorkville? So I let it go.
I'm glad, because I'm always disappointing in those situations.
I think it's hard not to be, right? I mean, you go, it's my friend just actually at the Schitt's Creek premiere that we were talking about before was also at that, and he met Chris Elliott, very exciting for him. I mean, it would be very exciting for anybody. But, and you know, so he's saying, "Oh, you know, I'm a big fan." Of course, Chris Elliott says, you know, "Thank you so much." And then he started, my friend, I guess, tried to get obscure. He was like, I wanted to like let him know I was like a really big fan. So I was like, "Action Family, you know, that thing you did, that was so cool." Like that this pilot in the 80s. And then Chris Elliott was like, "Oh, thank you so much." Like he said the same thing.
Yeah.
My friend was like, because that's all you can do is just sort of repeat that you were thankful. And then, I mean, you know, you can't be like, "Thank you so much. I've been looking for an archivist. I would love to hire you as my personal historian."
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
I was going to throw some SCTV kind of reference.
Okay.
I chased you down. So.
No, but we like that. We like that. No, I think any actor loves to be complimented on their work.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it is a good way in. You know, just saying you like their work, it's great. Or I like specifically something that you did in a show. Or
the fact that it was the gallery show was connected with Martin Short.
Mm-hmm.
And to see you there. So you guys are all still connected.
Oh yeah, it's like a big family. It really is like a big family. I mean, right now I'm working with Andrea Martin on the Canadian Screen Awards we're writing. Mm-hmm. And
it's amazing that you guys are working together. So
it's so much fun. It is. I mean, there's just this history and, you know, support of one another.
Mm-hmm.
Marty gave me away at my wedding. He's my son's godfather. I mean, it's just, we go back, and that history is great. It's a good way to stay grounded, I think, for people.
And just to like go to that, is when did the connection between SCTV, like you joined in what season on the Second City? We were trying to...
80, right? 80, 81. You were only on SCTV for one or two seasons?
I did 13 episodes.
So that's one season.
Wow. Yeah, one season.
That's amazing, because the impression I have of you is just...
It's a large presence in those 13 episodes.
Wow, really?
Seriously. You and Tony Rosato were the ones brought in, right?
Yep.
I didn't know it was only 13 episodes.
But that's a weird thing about SCTV. Is it's like how Harold Ramis was there for a certain amount of episodes.
That's true too.
And
yeah.
Yet you remember those, you know. And then partly because it had a different voice because it was so early at that time.
Oh, it was.
But also just because it's like, I mean, obviously Harold Ramis was also, for me being 7 years old and I'm watching the guy from Ghostbusters, and I'm like,
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was it with me and SCTV, is I literally watched it like a television station because mm-hmm. I was still kind of a kid, so I couldn't really make the distinction between any of that stuff, you know, so...
But what strikes me is that you were on SNL for 4 years.
Three years.
Mm-hmm. So your stay at SNL was longer than SCTV. But when I think of Robin Duke, the name Robin Duke, I associate it with SNL first, with SCTV first.
Yeah,
which is, it's kind of blowing my mind that you're saying you're only on for 13 episodes. I really associate you more with SCTV. Maybe it's because I'm Canadian.
I think maybe that's it. I think I do get recognized more when I'm in New York than I do when I'm in Canada.
You probably get approached
Or there's
more
of an appreciation of my work in the States for what I've done, you know, being on Saturday Night Live, than there is in Canada. It just, for some reason, it just doesn't have an impact here.
Wow.
I've always equated that with the fact that Saturday Night Live was, again, just going SCTV, I was watching from 1986 on. You know, Saturday Night Live, I wasn't even able to stay up that late until we're talking about 1994, right? So that's after.
Wow.
And then it's like, the Comedy Network was rerunning, and I was watching every season of Saturday Night Live as it was being reran, but I was already a teenager, so I was kind of like in my, like, I was like, I know what I like on Saturday Night Live. I like this. And I was way more of, and it wasn't that I didn't like you guys, but I did know that was like the Dick Ebersol years or whatever.
It was the Dick Ebersol years. It was a different tone. There was a different take on it. I mean, Lorne is obviously, he's sort of, you know, on the pulse of what's going on in the world and culturally. You know, he just knows what's hip.
Mm-hmm.
Dick was a numbers guy.
Yeah.
So he had that sensibility that he was doing things that were more about the numbers than they were about being original or creative. Or
do you find now that SNL has been around for four decades now, and there's the cast that has gone on to become A-listers and stuff, do you find that, are you treated differently because of the Dick Ebersol years with
or
other cast members or whatever?
Yeah, we were. There is a difference. I don't think that is the case anymore. And it was really nice to be included in this Man Seeking Woman, because it is a Lorne Michaels. It is a Broadway video production.
Oh, that's amazing. Cool. That's
so
amazing.
So it was like, whoa,
that's so
this
funny,
is great.
Right?
Years later.
This is just about to start airing, if not.
It aired last night. Yes.
So
have a Lorne Michaels impression?
I've never worked with Lorne. I mean, I worked with Dick. I've met Lorne a couple of times, but I'm not big on, I'm not good at impressions.
Me either. I do them though. I try them. I try
They're
them.
Awesome. I'm always encouraging
them. Always encouraging them sarcastically to be done by me.
The Dick Ebersol years, you know, now we could look at it and go, wow, that was a pretty heavy cast.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo. Was Julie Louise
Dreyfus? Julie Dreyfus. Tim Kazurinsky,
Gilbert Gottfried. Mary Gross, right?
I mean, it was a
big... No, not Gilbert Gottfried.
Wasn't he in that one season with Julie Louis-Dreyfus? Or was that the Lorne Michaels season?
That might have been Lorne Michaels.
He was barely in there. Yeah. But it is.
No, Julia came on in the second year I was there with her husband, Brad Hall.
Brad Hall.
Gary Kroger. Mm-hmm. And, they were there.
Was Terry Sweeney in those years, too?
No, Terry was before. He was with the Gene Demeaney.
Okay, that's such an interesting... I remember I read that book, the Live from New York book, and that segment of it in particular is like this funny... It's just different. It's like you said, you can tell it was a numbers game. Even you were talking about Andy Kaufman earlier. Mm-hmm. I distinctly remember, you know, again, being a teenager and being like, well, this guy is cool. And then, but it was that point where they voted him off of the show.
Was that whole Larry thing on the Lobster and there was all those things, yeah.
But your entrance onto SNL was interesting too, because it was through, it had a Canadian connection, right, with Catherine O'Hara?
Well, Catherine and I go back to high school. We were best friends in high school. And so I've just sort of followed Catherine.
What high school was it?
Burnham Thorpe Collegiate.
Okay.
Wow.
So we just made fast friends in grade 9. And
that's amazing.
So Catherine, you know, that's where I started at Second City, was going down. Catherine's brother, Marcus, was dating Gilda Radner. And Gilda would get Catherine and I tickets to see Godspell.
Right.
And we'd go while we were in high school to see Godspell all the time.
I heard Martin Short on Howard Stern. He said he went out with Gilda Radner,
too.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah. So, but was he dating Gilda then? He may have been dating Gilda then. I don't know. I just remember being starstruck, you know, in high school with Martin Short. and then, so anyway,
in
Catherine,
Godspell, you're
because Gilda one time included us all in a dinner, and we went out with them. So that was pretty cool. She was great. But Catherine, after high school, she kept saying she wanted to be an actress, and I would say, yeah, I want to be an actress too. And she went and did it. She went down to Second City, auditioned. She didn't get in the first time, but then she started working at the door and working in the coat check. And then joined the touring company, went to workshops, and then she got onto the stage. All, like, very quickly, this all happened. So I was going down to Second City and watching and thinking, oh, my God, this is what I want to do. I was going to university. At the time, I went that route, instead of being an actress, went to university, but I was just so smitten with Second City when I went down to the theater, because I was watching people like John Candy, Eugene Levy, sitting in the audience, and just, this is the best thing ever. And there wasn't any comedy out there at that point. There wasn't, you didn't have Yuck Yucks. You may have had Yuck Yucks. I think Yuck Yucks was just starting at the same time. So,
but it sounded like Yuck Yucks was like seven guys in a small room just
each
other. Like the early one is really like a self-powered kind of thing.
How is it? What is the storyline from you being in the crowd at Second City to becoming part of the cast?
Well, I started taking workshops. With Sheldon Patinkin, Joe Flaherty taught them, Del Close, that improv guru, you know about Del? So Del, and Del was casting a touring company for Second City while I was taking his workshops on a Saturday. And he cast the first seven people who walked through the door of the workshop as the touring company. So that's how I got my... It was about timing. It was about showing up and being on time. That's how I got my first job at Second City.
Wow. It says it like the success is half of it is showing up, or whatever amount of it is just showing up.
Yeah.
I almost didn't come today, but
So I always tell my students, you know, it's always about timing, being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. And was Catherine instrumental in getting you on the actual television show for that season?
Well, Catherine, it was just there weren't a lot of women available in comedy at that time. So I think it was just a natural progression for me to go from having worked at the theater for so long and then stepping into Catherine's, you know, after she left SCTV.
And then she left to go to SNL, and then you left SCTV to replace her on SNL. Am I right, or do I have that wrong?
Yeah, I didn't really... She came back to do SCTV and called me from SNL to say it wasn't working out for her at SNL. So it was sort of... Everything was up in the air. I don't know if I was going to go back to SCTV or not. But when Catherine went to Saturday Night Live, she got there and she knew she didn't want to be there. She knew it wasn't right for her. Mm-hmm. Actually, at that time, she wanted to get into film. So she felt that Saturday Night Live wasn't going to help her do that. So she called me up and said, they're going to be looking for women, fly down right away. So I came down right away, and she introduced me to Dick and all that. And then we were, I met with Dick, and then she said, well, let's go. And I said, have they told you yet if you're going to do it? And I said, no, they haven't told me yet. So Catherine said, well, just go in there and tell him that you have to go and you need an answer.
Oh, my God.
I know. Okay, Catherine. So I did. And I said, you know, I have to leave, so do you know whether or not, could you just tell me whether, I can't believe the nerve. And he hired me.
Right. Wow. Right, because we're Canadian.
Exactly. Right? So Catherine just pushing me. Asking. So she was very instrumental in being a friend.
Yeah.
You know, and just
encouraging.
And encouraging and supportive and believing in me. And she's great. You know, she's very generous, Catherine.
I was going to ask also about that, the period on Saturday Night Live, like being in popular sketches and stuff. You said they recognize you now in New York, but at that time when it was happening, how often were you recognized? You know, how much were you getting kind of talked to on the street and stuff? I just wonder about that.
Well, not a lot, because I would just be at NBC the whole time. I had no time. And then when we were off, I'd be driving back with my husband back to Toronto. And then we would drive back. So I would spend all my time driving back and forth and working there.
It's glamorous.
Yeah, oh, yeah, really glamorous.
That's always what Saturday Night Live does sound like. I guess I should have remembered that it is like 7 days a week, almost 24 hours.
It is. It's intense, but you only go at the most for 3 weeks at a time, and then you have time off.
Were you writing as well? Were you writing sketches on SNL?
I was, because...
And which ones saw, like, I know the whole process from what I've read in that book, Live from New York, but it's a lot of sketches and only a few get chosen, and then...
Well, in the very first year, I wasn't hired as a writer. However, I was getting as much on air as most of the writers. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the first year, I submitted all the sketches that I had, that had gotten on air, to the producer, to Dick Ebersole, as my portfolio to be hired as a writer. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't very well say no, because he had gotten a lot of sketches on the air. So that's how that worked. It was just, you know, sketches were chosen at the table read. And whatever got the most laughs made it to air.
Right. And I'm just leading this question, but what was one of the more popular sketches that you wrote?
Well, certainly the Winers were one of the first recognizable characters from that time, and also my very first impersonation of Mr. T. Nobody had ever done an impersonation of Mr. T before, and I had just seen Rocky III with my girlfriend, and we came out of the theater just going crazy, you know, I pity the fool, I pity the fool, shut up, old man. Just the two of us impersonating him. And I'd taken off work to go see him. I'd, you know, taken some time away from the 17th floor. And when I got back, I went to Dick Ebersol and I said, you have to get Mr. T. He's just the most incredible character I've ever seen. You've got to get him on the show.
To guest host.
He's
a god walking the earth, essentially.
But at that time, nobody knew who he was. Well, he has no TV cue, Robin. Nobody knows who he is.
He was he even, had he done he the Clubber
Lang
stuff?
He was Clubber Lang on
He was
Rocky
Clubber
Street,
Lang, yeah. But when I went to Dick, he didn't know who he was. Mm. He had no recognition at that point. So he vetoed that.
Yeah.
But about a month or so later, he came to me. And I guess they were auditioning him for the TV show that he did, A-Team.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were. Yeah, it may have been a screen test, but Dick came to me and he said, your buddy's coming on the show. What? He said, we're going to have Mr. T on, not as a guest host, but as a guest. So he wasn't the host of the show, but he was coming on as a guest.
Right.
Huh. So he said, write something up for him. So I wrote up Mr. and Mrs. T's Bloody Mary mix, where I was doing Mrs. T as Mr. T with his, you know, shut up old man. You come to my apartment, I'll show you a real Bloody Mary mix. all this. And so it passed read through, but Mr. T wasn't at read through. Eddie read it, I guess, or somebody read it at read through. And when he came on the Thursday to the camera blocking, the two producers, Dick and, who was the other one? Bob Tischler, came up to me and they said, Robin, he's here. You have to read him the script. You have to read, tell him what the script is or read him the script. And
oh
it was God, not
intimidating.
So intimidating that it wasn't the protocol for me to read the script to him.
Right.
They should have shown him the script.
Right.
However, I was on the floor of Studio 8H, and Dick and Bob literally hid behind a flat, introduced me to him, said, here's the script, why don't you read it? And they scurried off behind a flat. Because they didn't know what his reaction would be to somebody doing an impersonation of it.
So they thought maybe there would be like a body slam involved.
Yeah, maybe he would get upset. They didn't know. So I had to...
There would be a body to pity.
Oh my God.
Because nobody had ever done him before. So I said, Mr. T, I'll be playing you. You'll be playing you. And so I read him the script. And at the end, I just heard this... There was a pause. I heard, you're a funny lady. And that was it. And then they came back out from behind the flat and everything was fine. And they
You know. So you did the impression of Mr. T, just you and him in a room together. That's it. And those guys were like kind of...
We're actually on the floor of Studio 8H.
Oh, I see.
So we were sort of, you know, on a set of something with a flat. So that's how I read it to him. And it went okay. But what I had done was I had repeated, I pity the fool, I pity the fool, shut up, old man, I pity the fool, throughout the piece. Mm-hmm. So I'd taken that from, he'd only said it once in the movie, but I'd taken it from
but
the movie.
But everyone says, I pity the fool when they do their Mr. T impression.
Exactly.
And that's because that's what you personally remember.
I take full credit for that.
Right.
I absolutely do.
That's amazing.
But
that's
because
amazing. Because I'm Canadian, I don't toot my own horn. But now I am.
How many people have done? Everyone's done.
Everybody's
Mr. T
done.
Mr. T is still around. That's the best part. I just watched Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and I watched the end credits, and I was like, Mr. T, that was Mr. I knew I recognized the voice, and I was like,
So did he start to do I Pity the Fool himself more and more in public appearances after that?
He may have. I mean, I know that the writers after that, Eddie started to play Mr. T, so. they started using "I Pity the Fool."
Right.
And that's because kind of it an amazing was such thing. A catchphrase. It was such a recognizable catchphrase.
So basically,
you know, "I Pity the Fool."
You walked out of Rocky III. The one thing that stuck in your head was that one line, and you took it to national TV, and it just became part of the pop culture lexicon.
Thank you, Danko. That's it exactly.
Wow, that is pretty heavy.
Yeah, it is. And do you think I get a single cent out of that? I remember being up in a...
We're giving you $50.
Okay, I appreciate that. I remember being up like north somewhere in this little cottage town, and I saw this little kid with a T-shirt, "I Pity the Fool," on it. And I went up to him and I went, "You know, that's me. Like, I did that. Like, that's..." And he just kind of, "Who are you? What are you talking about?"
Was he with his parents or something?
He might have been. I don't know. It was just like trying to grab credit for it.
Yeah.
It was so sad and pathetic. Yes, with the new generation. Yeah, connect.
Right in there. Yeah. No, I've done that many
times.
But
it's something I'm really proud of.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's amazing.
And I love to tell that to my students when I talk about, you know, finding a catchphrase. And I also have to credit my friend Liz Welch, who also, you know, was she came out of the theater as well. Yeah, she was my friend. Yeah,
the movie with, right?
Yeah. Don Rickles came to do Saturday Night Live. You know Don Rickles.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Hello, dummy.
I might say that to my students, and they would go, they might not know.
We're nerds, you know. Like, yeah. I know. Hello. Okay, hello, dummy. You know, we're just having a good time here. I love when he ends his whole thing. Goes, we're just having fun here, and we know that everyone is truly equal. And
yeah.
You know, close.
Insult but, everybody, and then
yeah. But he came. He came to Saturday Night Live, and we had the meeting with the hosts in the room. He was doing jokes, I guess, but they were like you with the hair and the glasses and the shirt, and everybody would laugh. And I'd think, but he didn't say anything funny. But we were laughing at the rhythm. It was an automatic response to hearing that cadence, that rhythm. So
Right. I see what you mean.
Well, that's where you get to quite a few realizations in comedy, I think, where it's kind of like, oh, they just need to like me. I could literally be talking about you know, the most normal stuff, telling a knock-knock joke, but if they like me, you know, I can.
You can get away with a lot.
Yeah. You mentioned Don Rickles, and that just made me think of SNL again. Were there any other hosts that... or even working or moments on SNL that you remember and you go, that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, you know? Sitting in a room watching Don Rickles, like, cut everyone up, that's a pretty incredible experience.
Well, I remember Jerry Lewis being very nasty about Sandra Bernhardt.
Yeah.
He was making, you know, not very nice comments, and he had done... the movie
King of Comedy,
which she's in,
she and him are amazing.
So they started that together already. So what was this, a professional thing or a personal thing at this
personal.
Point?
Personal, he just didn't like her.
Okay. Well, I was reading a story about
just horrible.
I mean, he's
and so I'm telling.
No, tell it, please. Everybody, someone else had a story about Jerry Lewis. Who is it that had a feud with them? If it was Roseanne or. I remember
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, no, Jerry Lewis.
But he said, like, he was one of the guys that said women weren't funny.
Yeah.
Well, I think Marty was interviewing him.
Like as Glick or as really
on a
show?
No, on a panel.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, that's where he said that he didn't think women were funny.
It was Joan Rivers, I remember, who had a feud with Jerry Lewis as well, because she'd spoken out against him because... I guess at one of his muscular dystrophy fundraisers, he was like standing next to a kid, and he's like, "This kid is gonna die."
Oh!
She was like, she was like, "You can't say that when to a kid who's right next to
me." But
he was just calling those in. I mean, really, at that point, right? Those telethons.
I would open up the question about like memorable moments to really not just Saturday Night Live. I would say maybe just in general with you. You know, it seems like you might have been present for a few really interesting things.
things or combinations of people. But is this too general a question?
But it was
is it a question? Radner, did I put a question mark in
did
it?
Did Gilda Radner, I mean, you guys are all Canadians, Martin Short, Catherine O'Hara, Robin Duke. How did Gilda Radner start mingling with all these Canadians back in the day?
She had come up from Detroit. I think she went to camp up here.
It's as simple as that?
Yeah. And she may, I'm not sure if she went with Lorne Michaels. I don't know if she went with Lorne Michaels or not. But she came up here, yeah. So and was, she may have come up here to audition for, well, she was auditioning for Godspell. Why was she here? I can't remember.
You know, there must be a, was there an exchange thing at any point with the Chicago and Toronto kind of Second City thing? Like, was that some, I feel like that.
Yeah, there was, but she was always, she auditioned here for Second City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And the Groundlings, that was in Chicago as well, right?
No, L.A.
L.A.? There wasn't a Chicago Groundlings? Oh.
No.
So, okay. Because there was a... It's reminding me of when you were on SNL, you worked with Brian Doyle Murray, right?
That's right. Brian was there the very first year that I was there.
And was it? Do I have it wrong? Was Bill and Brian, were they on the cast at the same time, or did they just cast?
That's a good question.
Jim Belushi was also you worked with.
Jim Belushi was also there.
So it was Jim and Brian.
Yeah, no. No.
They actually were never allowed to be in the scene.
Yeah, really. No, Jim came on the third year that I was there.
I see. I feel that you have a story about Jim that...
Oh, just no. By your... Oh, no. No. I would never work in the business again if I had a story about Jim Belushi.
Oh, yeah. He's the... Okay.
I gotcha.
He's the gatekeeper. I remember, by the way, I'm really interested in like the path that we're going on. First of all,
You know what? The best person, I loved Eddie Murphy. I loved Eddie. He was a great, great, funny, deeply funny, and he is. And I hope to God he's there. There's a big Saturday Night Live reunion anniversary, 40th anniversary in February. And I hope to God Eddie's there, because he's just, I would love to see him again.
Because he doesn't take part in these things.
Well, I don't think he came to the last one.
And
no.
He's not part of the
because he was mad at somebody.
For a sketch they did of him, right?
Yeah, but hopefully he's gone beyond that. I hope he goes. He's fun. He was just deeply, deeply funny. In a room, he would have you doubled over laughing. You know, he was just a genuinely funny person.
And he was
and
a
loose
kid.
And,
right?
He was a kid. Yeah. And he was in my office one day, the very first month or so, and I remember him saying he wanted to be as big as Elvis.
Right.
And I looked and I thought, oh my God, what confidence. And
yeah.
I'd never heard anybody say anything like that, right? I'm coming from Canada. You're not going to hear anybody say, I'm going to be as big as Elvis.
Stoico is even discouraged to say, yeah. I'm as big as Elvis Stoico. Elvis Mitchell, like just these smaller Elvises.
Yeah.
You can't even...
I'll just take his name. But that was Eddie's dream, and he made it come true. He just...
Say something like that in a non and not be deluded. And again, this is just that Canadian take where it's like I'd be like, yeah. "Oh, you must be
what?
Crazy!
How dare you say that?
I mean, you said
how
something.
How dare you think that highly of yourself?
When you were talking about Schitt's Creek and just how it seems to be getting a good response right now, the new show with like Catherine O'Hara and stuff. You're saying like it seems to be raising the bar for humor here, and it's like I feel like that's what I want to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think Canadian comedy is all about like, okay, there's the bar, let's just hit the bar.
Well, you need somebody Eugene Levy with his point of view, with his experience.
Like when you worked with him, what does he bring, you know, in terms
of
Eugene
skill? I worked with Eugene on a stage show we did Saturday Night Beaver years ago with Marty and Peter Torkface, Stephen Campman, myself, and Marty's wife for a while, Mary Charlotte Wilcox.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene directed that show, and he taught me about writing, editing, writing. It was about changing words in a line of dialogue to make it work, taking a phrase out to make it work. It was all just down to the word, the writing. He's just brilliant. He's
so it
brilliant.
Was instrumental for you in terms of, like, I always think that's the best, to feel, just to have someone mentoring you, for lack of a better word, you know, or just show you some kind of a rope and you go, oh, and then they kind of go, no, that's not right. And you have to go, oh, more than, you know, that's because
but
that's
what
it takes.
All those guys are like. I mean, working with Andrea, it is just getting it right. Thinking. I mean, they just don't do... They make it right.
But
they
that was SCTV to me, you know? Yeah. And that was... And some of the people I've seen who have that influence from that show... Like, I was a person who does a show called... he does a really... His name's John Borser. He does this very funny sort of call-in show called The Best Show. And he posted something from SCTV the other day, and it was like the William B. Williams show. And it was when Martin Short, as Irving Cohen goes, you know, I needed, you think that's bad, I had to get a urine softener or something. Like, he said he needed a urine softener. And it's like, you do really, it's very well chosen.
Yeah,
you
know? No, it's specific. Try to get it across to my students about being specific.
Yeah.
You know, just the reference, the detail. Second City was, you want to make your audience feel smart. You want to play to their highest intelligence, so that's where we all came from. That's where all those people came from, was that place of reference, so that you felt your audience felt smart. Don't dumb down, dumb up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always for Second City. It was easy to get that laugh off of, you know, genital humor or whatever.
Farting.
Yeah. It was always easy. And you would be looked down on if you got a laugh that way.
Right.
People would just like roll their eyes. You wouldn't go there. Mm-hmm. You were always trying to find the better laugh, find the smarter laugh.
I wanted to ask something else too about what you said earlier, preferring writing over performing. Mm-hmm. And you meant specifically on camera, right? When you were saying that like,
I love writing. I love performing on stage. I'm not comfortable performing for the camera.
Really?
Oh, I'm just too big. I just go too big. I make faces.
Funny.
I make big faces.
I mean, that's what I feel like. That is what people, in a sense, like associate with you. These big kind of characters. You
well, know, less is more. Less is more for film,
but now you're on a show. Now you're on a show.
Now I'm on a show, and less is more. Still, the director, Jonathan Crystal, who does Portlandia.
Oh, that was the director.
Of one of them, and I just adored him. He was so lovely, with just this very quirky sense of sensibility and humor and quiet. I just adored him, and he was just trying to get me to be, you know, to bring it down, more conversational, more, and it was great. I did it for him, you know, at one point I just said to him, do you know who you're speaking to? Do you know who you're talking? That's what I do. I make big, stupid faces.
I elongate words.
Yes,
it works when you're doing this.
Women fully clothed.
Women fully clothed, right?
Yep.
How long has that been going on for?
Oh my God, we started in 2003.
Mm-hmm. Almost coincides exactly with your teaching.
It does. Yeah. It did. Mm-hmm. Because they both started at the same time. I had raised my son. I was ready to go back and do something, but I wanted to work with like-minded people. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to have laughs. I didn't want to go out and just do bad stuff that was out there. Reading scripts that were just not good. People thinking that they were funny.
Mm-hmm.
people who didn't have any sensibility or understanding of what was funny. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to, of course I wouldn't get work auditioning for these things because I didn't have any faith in them. So it was a case of pulling together some people that I hadn't worked with before, but who I thought were really good and who had made me laugh, like Jane Eastwood, Kathy Greenwood, Teresa Pavlenuk. And I also knew that they were good writers, not Jane. Jane is a muse, mm-hmm. but Kathy and Teresa were good writers. And I wanted to play up. So we started this little company. It has a, you know, a more detailed kind of history, but that's what it, that's who it is now. And Kathy and I are working together, writing for Andrea right now. We're having a ball, and Teresa is in Los Angeles writing for Schitt's Creek. So well, we haven't had an opportunity to.
Right.
But we do want to do a television show. That's our, we have an option to write a new stage show or write a show for TV. And I think our focus now will be TV.
But we, yeah, no, Robin, thank you for letting us come down here.
Yeah,
oh,
this
no
is
problem.
Awesome.
It's fun. I like to, you know, obviously, I talk a lot.
This is all through the magic of Twitter.
Yeah.
I tweeted you, and then I was texting with Nick, going, okay, I tweeted her. Okay, let's wait.
But I don't check my Twitter too often.
You uploaded a picture of you and Mark McKinney, and I go, she must be on Twitter right now. She just uploaded a picture.
Right.
And then that's when I got you the second time.
Oh, that's how it works. I should get you guys working for me doing Twitter.
Yeah.
Getting it out there at the right time.
Or should we write jokes for you and just pretend you're ghostwriters?
Yeah. Anything. I tried. I tried to get it out about Man Seeking Woman, but.
But when is Man Seeking Woman on?
Exactly. 10:30.
On FXX.
FXX.
Right after It's Always Sunny.
In California.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. It is always sunny in California.
It is always sunny
in California. All right, I've gone too long. My brain's going
now. Well, that's cool. We just have this phone book we'd like you to read now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.